Okay, well, now that I'm up here, I want to take a second just to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I'm sure I'll miss saying that to some of you, so I had the chance to say it. Merry Christmas to all of you. We're beginning our series on Roman Catholicism tonight, and I've selected as the theme the Society of Jesus, otherwise known as the Jesuits. This is an order within the Catholic Church that I think is such a picture of the hierarchy of the church, and it helps us to understand the mindset and where it comes from. And so it is not my desire to everything that I'm going to say tonight for the most part is negative. But I'm not trying to demonize the Jesuits. They need the Lord like anybody else does, and I don't want you to think. I think a lot of them have just swallowed, if you'll pardon the term, a lie, and they believe and they're deceived, and they need the light of the gospel, and we need to reach them with it. And so that is ultimately the point. And I know that I felt the need to say that, because like I said, these are not good things, but it needs to be said. So what I'd like to do tonight is I'll start off with some of the controversial things of the Jesuit order. Most here I think have heard of that. In fact, you've probably heard of a lot of the things I'm going to say. And then I'd like to get into the history of the Jesuits, and that's where you're going to see where it all started. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the teachings of the Jesuits and their educational philosophy. Okay, I'd like to start off with a quote, and the person that gave this quote is Dr. Roberto Rivera. He is an ex-Jesuit priest. And I select this quote because I think it encapsulates the whole idea of what I'm going to talk about, and it really shows where they're coming from. He says this: "The most dangerous of men are those who appear very religious, especially when they are organized and in a position of authority. They have the deep respect of the people who are ignorant of their ungodly push for power behind the scenes." This really explains the Jesuit order, I think, more than anything. So let's talk a little bit about the controversies then that through the years that the Jesuits have been involved in. They have been known as a power-seeking order. Okay, now when I say order, there are different orders in the Catholic Church. You have the Dominican Order, the Franciscan Order. Some of them are dedicated to teaching. Others are dedicated to a monastic lifestyle. And then you have the Jesuits, a very distinct and a special order. They didn't come into being until the time of the Reformation, and many believe for that reason it was done as a counter-Reformation order in the Catholic Church. They have listed a group of things known as the Moneta Secreta, which is the secret instructions of the Jesuits. So there was a group of instructions given to that Jesuit order that was given to the Superior General, and I'll explain who that is in just a little bit. And what it did was it laid down the methods to be adopted for the increase of the power and influence of the Jesuit order. Now, when I say Society of Jesus and Jesuits, I'm talking about the same. That's the same. It's just another name for it. This document is considered fake, of course, by the Jesuits, but there have been abundant proof. And you can go onto the Internet yourself and read it for yourself. Some of the things that they say, and I've selected this because it shows how they seek for power. They say that every means is to be employed of acquiring wealth for the order. Every means. In other words, to them, the end justifies the means. They do this oftentimes by promising young men and enticing them to enter into the order and to endow their estates. Also, widows. They have been known historically to take widows, kind of cajole them, if you will, and dissuade them from remarriage so that they can give their wealthy estates to the order. This is the way they did that. Now, of course, they do it. They don't come at it directly. This is what they said to do. This is part of the means that they use to gain wealth for the order. Every means is to be used, they say also, for the advancement of Jesuits to the seat of a bishop and other ecclesiastical dignities. In this way, they would have that seat of power. By the way, we tend to use the word cathedral to talk about, it's kind of an old, to us a cathedral is an old church building. But really, that was the bishop's seat in way back when in history. So the Jesuit order did, again, whatever means are necessary to have their priests in that position. Then they also say this in the Moneda Secreta. The world is to be persuaded that the society is animated by the purest and least interested motives. What that means is this, is that they're to make it look like their motives are pure. In just a little bit, I'm going to show a speech by the current superior general. And you're going to see a lot of these things I'm saying to you are not outdated in their mind. It's very current. The reputation of those who quit the order is to be assailed and maligned in every way, including this very priest who mentioned the quote before. He was maligned by the order completely. In fact, the popes, without history, they have signed some things against the Jesuit order. And perhaps you've heard the famous phrase, "I've just signed my death warrant." Well, that actually came from a pope who signed a warrant, as it were, or a piece of paper that reduced the power of the Jesuits. And he said that by doing that, he was signing his own death warrant. So you see the idea. In these controversial things, their unending seek for power is certainly one thing, but then also a lot of political intrigue. So they, although wouldn't have the position of a president or a king, but they certainly have been influential in politics. One of a Spanish Dominican in 1549 said this of the Jesuits: "If the members of the Society of Jesus continue in this wise, that is, their activities during the Counter-Reformation, then the day will come, which God forfend, when the kings of Europe will wish to rise against them, but will find that they are no longer capable of doing so." So this priest mentions in his, and he was a priest, he wasn't necessarily against those things, but he recognized that the power given to the Jesuits doesn't really have anything to back it or have to counter it. There's no check, there's no balance. Okay, now a lot of these things I'm going to talk about have occurred a long time ago because those were the books that I was reading. However, you'll see that even to this very year, some things were said that shows that they're still up to the same thing. In France, the Jesuits were temporarily banished from France in 1594 after a man named Jean Châtel tried to assassinate the King of France, at that time Henry IV. Under questioning, Châtel revealed that he had been educated by the Jesuits of the College de Clermont. The Jesuits were accused of inspiring Châtel's attack. Two of his former teachers were exiled, and a third was hanged. The College of Clermont was closed, and the building was confiscated. The Jesuit order was banned from France, although the ban was quickly lifted. So you see lots of controversial things, even in politics. That was France. In England, and this would be more familiar to us, I think, Henry Garnet, one of the leading English Jesuits, was hanged for treason because of the knowledge of the gunpowder plot. Now, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of that. That was in 1605 when James I of England, also the 6th of Scotland, the very King James of our Bible, was going to take the throne of England. There was a very heavy push in England to keep England Catholic through Queen Mary of Scots. And most of the Protestant aristocracy was in the House of Parliament, and they tried to blow up the House of Parliament and get rid of all of them in one failed swoop effort. Well, it turns out the Jesuits were behind that. So that was what was going on in England. And what about Germany? What was going on there? In Germany, this is during the World War, just before World War II, when the Third Reich was coming to power, actually on July 20th, 1933, there was an edict describing the relationship between the Holy See, that is the Catholic Church, and the Third Reich. This shows a German Catholic bishop swearing allegiance to the German state, vowing to support it, with all the holy ministry entrusted to them and to stop everything that would be detrimental to it. In fact, Adolf Hitler had a very close admiration for the Jesuits. I'm going to give you a quote that Hitler gave about the Jesuit order, and I want you to listen in particular what he says about youth. "I learned much from the order of the Jesuits. There has never been anything more grandiose than the hierarchical organization of the Catholic Church. I transferred much of this organization into my own party, that is the Nazi Party. And then he said this, and he didn't finish this quote. He said, "I am founding an order." He said that, "I am founding an order. I will raise up a youth that will make the world tremble. This is known as the Hitler Youth. The point is this. He used the Jesuit order principles in forming that order of youth. And you're going to see when the Superior General quotes some things, I want you to remember that and some of the things that he's going to say. The Jesuits are also in favor of the extermination of the Jews from Germany. In what is now called the Dreyfus Affair, there was a French captain of artillery by the name of Dreyfus that was accused of treason. While during the trial, the Jews became implicated. The Jews were implicated in that trial. So he was the one that was on trial for guiltiness, and they implicated the Jews. A Jesuit newspaper printed their take on the affair when it was written that, and this is quoting, so this is in a Catholic newspaper, "The Jew has been created by God to be used as a spy wherever some treason is being prepared. It is not only in France, but also in Germany, Austria, and Italy. The Jews must be excluded from the nation. Then, with the great harmony of former times reestablished, nations will find again their lost happiness." Now, this was in the Catholic paper. So you see, this political intrigue, they were moving at that time. It's always been the goal of the Catholic Church. World domination has always been their goal. What about in the United States back in World War II? The Christian Front was a Catholic movement opposed to the intervention of the United States in World War II. It was directed by one Father Coughlin, who was a notorious pro-Hitlerite and a Jesuit. His office received a plentiful supply of propaganda prepared by Goebbels' office. Now, you might recognize that name. He was Hitler's director of propaganda. In fact, a quote taken from the secret archives of the Third Reich said this: "Studying the evolution of anti-Semitism in the United States," this is German, the German people saying this, it's written there, "we note that the number of listeners to the radio broadcasts of Father Coughlin, well known for his anti-Semitism, exceeds 20 million. So here in America, during World War II, there was a push. The Jesuits were pushing anti-Semitism here in the United States when that was going on there. Okay, now this is all a long time ago. You're probably thinking that was all a long time ago. What about recent times? I'm going to show you, if we're ready. There's the Superior General. The current Superior General is named Arturo Sosa. And he, now this is in Spanish, but it has English subtitles, so I'm preparing you for that. And so you'll have to get used to reading the English subtitles. But some of the things that he mentions, he mentions the four principles of what he calls the apostolic, I forget the name of it. I was certain that I was going to remember that, and I don't. But he mentions four things that the Jesuit order is their angle on things, their goals. And they are, you'll notice too, that nowhere is the gospel even hinted at all. So the Jesuit order has no intention of giving the gospel to the world at all, not in the least bit. This is the general, and I'm going to mention who that is, he's the head person of the Jesuit order, and he's giving what the intention of his order is for this year. By the way, this was in February of this year. And nothing about the gospel whatsoever. He mentions, and I want you to listen for these, that's why I'm mentioning it. He mentions a strong desire to continue the spiritual exercises of Ignatius. Now, I want you to remember that because I'm going to talk about those. Also, a strong desire to help the poor in ecological and humanitarian efforts. You remember that quote that said that they make themselves look that they have the purest intentions. A strong desire to influence the youth. We talked about that. By the way, he mentioned nothing about parents. He meant at all. In fact, there seems to be an isolation of the youth from their parents. And that's why the Catholics have these retreats for young people. And the parents aren't there. An obvious and a strong global outreach. So you'll see these things. So again, you won't understand what he's saying, but the English subtitles are there. Okay.
Durante los últimos 16 meses, la Compañía de Jesús ha estado discerniendo cómo responder mejor a las exigencias actuales de la misión que le ha sido encomendada. Somos un grupo grande, esparcido por todo el mundo, formado por jesuitas y muchas otras personas con las que colaboramos en la misión de la Iglesia Católica. Somos seguidores de Jesús, el Señor crucificado y resucitado. El proceso ha culminado con la aprobación y confirmación del Papa Francisco. Por eso hoy anunciamos las 4 preferencias apostólicas universales para guiar el esfuerzo apostólico de la Compañía de Jesús en los próximos 10 años. Los ejercicios espirituales de San Ignacio y la práctica del discernimiento personal y en común son nuestro modo preferencial de mostrar a los seres humanos el camino hacia Dios. La condición es que nosotros, los jesuitas, seamos hombres de oración y profundamente arraigados en Cristo para poder compartir con quienes colaboramos en la misión y todas las personas de buena voluntad este tesoro espiritual. Porque somos un grupo que discierne, nos comprometemos también a difundir el discernimiento como modo de tomar decisiones en sintonía con los deseos de Dios para la humanidad en todos los campos en los que nos movemos en nuestra vida y trabajo. Preferimos caminar junto a los pobres, los descartados del mundo, los vulnerados en su dignidad. El camino que queremos hacer junto a los pobres es el de promover la justicia social y el cambio de las estructuras económicas, políticas y sociales generadoras de injusticia. Esta es una dimensión necesaria de la reconciliación de los seres humanos, los pueblos y sus culturas entre sí, con la naturaleza y con Dios. Son los jóvenes, con su perspectiva, quienes pueden ayudarnos a comprender mejor el cambio de época que estamos viviendo y su novedad esperanzadora. Queremos caminar con ellos, discernir estas posibilidades y encontrar a Dios en las profundidades de la realidad. La creación hoy clama como nunca antes, ansiando ser liberada. La actual crisis ambiental está afectando de manera particular a los pobres y vulnerables. Como seguidores de Jesús, junto a todas las personas de buena voluntad, queremos actuar urgentemente para detener el deterioro de nuestra casa común y dejarla en las mejores condiciones posibles a las futuras generaciones. Todavía podemos cambiar el curso de la historia. Aceptamos la invitación a formar parte de ese cambio, poniendo en práctica en nuestra vida y misión estas 4 preferencias.
Le animamos a que aprenda más y lleve a cabo estas acciones con nosotros, para que todos respondamos al llamado de Dios, expresado a través del clamor de este mundo.
Okay, would you be able to read the subtitles? Were you able to see them? Okay, because I couldn't see. Another reason why I selected it was because it looked like he was a head and hands floating around. I thought that was kind of neat. Anyway. So you see some things there. Did you notice that nothing about the gospel at all was mentioned? At all. They are the Society of Jesus, so-called. Nothing about the gospel whatsoever. They make it look like they're trying to humanitarian efforts and these kind of things, which in and of itself aren't bad. That's only a temporary fix, isn't it? What about their eternity? Nothing about that. You notice that youth retreats that they had there, this idea of building up a youth that is going to follow them. This all has to do with global domination. Now, the next thing I want to show, you've heard recently of priests and the sex abuse crimes and things that are going on. Well, a lot of them that have been implicated have been Jesuits. In fact, the Jesuits themselves have given a list of these priests to us. And so the next clip is a news clip that shows some of these things, and what I guess I'll comment on it afterwards. So let's go ahead and show it.
Also happening tonight, new questions about church transparency and the ongoing pre-sex abuse crisis. These questions are being raised now, just one day after the Jesuit Religious Order released a list of 50 priests who abuse children. That list includes 8 priests who were assigned to places like Canisius High School and College here in Buffalo. Tonight, our I-Team Chief Investigator Charlie Specht discovers some of these abusive men are still wearing a collar and acting as priests.
Colleen and Molly O'Hara were in seventh grade when they say Father Peter Conroy first began touching and groping them in the 1970s.
It was very inappropriate behavior for anybody, any adult to a child, to a teen, young preteen. Just pulled me down on his lap and with the hand drifted up under the school uniform.
Conroy worked at both Canisius High School and college as recently as 2002 when the women came forward to report the abuse, and the Jesuits say Conroy admitted to abusing the minors. The Jesuits removed Conroy from Canisius and impeded him from ministry that year. They listed no assignments for Conroy after 2002 in the documents released Tuesday. But research by the I-Team based on the church's own records show Conroy is still very much a priest, and he's not the only one. Other Buffalo Jesuits accused of abusing minors were never defrocked or stripped of their status as Roman Catholic priests. Instead, they were quietly sent to retreats and other destinations where they serve to this day, even after they have been placed on the Jesuits' abuse list.
He may have somewhat less exposure to children, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't use his office to access children.
Patrick Wall is a former priest who works for a law firm suing the church. He wasn't surprised to see Conroy, since 2002, has been assigned to a church retreat center outside Poughkeepsie.
He's doing spiritual direction, he's saying mass, he's hearing confessions.
Just this week, we found this review on the retreat center's Facebook page, where a woman says, "I spent an afternoon at Jogues Retreat. Father Conroy was a blessing."
There are no signs, there's no disclaimers. There's no either written or verbal warning that if a parent wanted to go on retreat and their kids came to visit them, there would be absolutely no warning that Peter Conroy is there and about his past history.
William Scanlon is another priest who used to work at Canisius College. The Jesuits say he admitted to abusing minors in 1994, and they restricted and then impeded him twice since then. But that didn't stop the order from including him in its official magazine in 2010, where he was shown giving communion. The Jesuits say another priest who served in Buffalo, Father Thomas Denny, was credibly accused of abusing minors and was impeded in 2002. But as recently as 2016, he donated to this charity using his religious title. Jesuit Superior John Cicero said Tuesday that, quote, "any living Jesuit with a credible allegation of abuse is removed from ministry and assigned to a community that does not serve minors, where he lives under a closely monitored safety plan. That plan means Jesuits may be asked to participate in psychological treatment. In some cases, they are restricted from public celebration of the sacraments, and they are not allowed to dress as a priest or use the title father or reverend."
I have never seen a Jesuit who is a properly trained probations officer that can truly supervise these guys.
Now, in the one case where in the Northeast where a Jesuit was defrocked, he was also charged criminally. But the reality is most of these priests, if they are still alive, cannot be prosecuted because the statutes of limitation have already expired on most of these crimes. Live for the I-Team, Charlie Speck, 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, so there's some of the things that we see there. Of course, there are those implications, but when it says defrocked, I hope you understand it takes away their collar, okay? It takes away the authority to be priest, but they don't do that. They just move them somewhere else. All right, now, that's some of the controversial things. Now, let's talk about the history of this. Where did all this come from? I will say this. The history, okay. I'll just begin. A Spaniard of Basque origin, now the Basque region is the region of the Pyrenees between France and Spain, and formerly a soldier. Now, the man that started the order used to be a soldier, and we see a lot of his militant attitude in the order itself. His original name, Ignacio López de Recalde, and he was born in a castle in Loyola. And so that's why he's called Ignatius of Loyola. Now, he was possessed of a very emotional nature. In fact, it could be said that he was an emotional basket case. He was tormented, going to the point of nervous breakdowns. He was seeing visions. He was tormented about his sin. Here's what I want to try to get across to you. He was trying to find a way to get peace from the guilt of his sin. So he's saying penance every day. He's going through the Catholic steps. Long fasts, he would whip himself. Self-maceration, which just means that wasting his body weight, he would stay submerged underwater for many, 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 many hours. And then, so how did he get to the end of that? Now, here's the thing that was amazing to me. He decided after all of that, of course, he never got any kind of riddance of his guilt through that. This is what he decided. He said that this idea of sin was only a trick of Satan. And so then he devoted his life to his visions. Now, saying that sin was just a trick of Satan is really a saying that sin doesn't exist. Now, this has been Satan's trick all along. When he told Eve, "Thou shalt not surely die," he was suggesting that there was no judgment for sin. And so the Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 that we are not ignorant of his devices, talking about Satan. He's doing the same things over and over and over again. And undoubtedly, he was working in the life of Ignatius of Loyola. So now this man, who was essentially a raving emotional wreck and plagued by his sin, feels no more need to deal with this sin because to him, it doesn't exist. But he was never really delivered from it. A person like this, then, is capable of committing crimes of emotion with no remorse because to him there's no need for remorse over something that doesn't exist. So this is the man, then, that started this order. And that state, and he drew up a number of things. Initially, he wanted to make the Catholic Church more like Christ. He wanted to reform, as it were. And that was his intention. Now, the Bible never calls a sin a trick. Instead, it completely and totally affirms the reality of it. Loyola believed that he was freed from sin, but was really the servant of it. These visions that he had and believed in were a resurgence again of a spirit of Spiritism, otherwise known as Gnosticism. So he was a Gnostic, you might say. Paul dealt with these things, and in Colossians chapter 2, verses 13 through 15, Paul said this, "And you being dead in your sins, and the uncircumcision of your flesh hath he quickened together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses, blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross, and having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it." I guess what I'm saying is if a Christian would have told Ignatius of Loyola a way that he could stop being tormented and not feel the guilt of his sin, and that was through Christ, then maybe things would have been better, but they never did. Or at least we don't know of it. So he drafted the statutes of his order in 1539, and it was orally approved by the Pope. But it wasn't until 1540 that it actually became a papal bull. Now that's the seal that a pope puts on there. And so that's why it's called papal bull. So when the popes then speak ex cathedra, which means they're speaking on church's matters, they are supposedly infallible. Now I'll get to that in a minute. So they accepted this order as an official order of the Catholic Church in 1540. Now, originally, the order was constituted as a minimal society. That is, it was only supposed to have 60 members. There were a lot of enemies within the Catholic Church against having this order made, but they were overthrown, and they said, well, it was a compromise. Well, maybe we can't stop it, but we'll limit it to only 60 members. But Ignatius managed to circumvent this very neatly and Jesuitically, you might say, although only 60 were permitted to be official Jesuits, there was an unlimited of people that could be part of the order. Now, there's something about the Jesuits that's different from the other orders. The other orders, like the Dominicans and the Franciscans, they take vows. There's three vows they take. They take a vow of celibacy. They take a vow of poverty. And I forget the third one. But the Jesuits, they take a fourth vow. And this is what makes their order completely different. They take a vow where they swear allegiance and to defend the Pope directly. That's a vow that only the Jesuits take. The Catholic Church, that is, the papacy accepted this order because they believed it was going to help the Catholic Church better dominate the world. In fact, they are quoted as saying, the popes are quoted back then as saying this order has undertaken to revive that papal imperium and restore it to its former majesty and supremacy. There has never before in all of history been such a body of men as this, and not even the Senate of old Rome could have laid out its design for world domination with greater certainty of success. So you see that they accepted the order into the Catholic Church, believing that it was going to help them regain the glory of Rome. Now, since that time, and they expanded the, I'm kind of going quickly through this, they expanded the power of the Jesuits in that they were able to finance themselves, and of course they were allowed through the Catholic Church to be involved in politics. We saw how that went. Now, this is the thing to see. Many popes, since the time that the order was drafted, decided or figured out that it wasn't a good idea. When they saw what happened, and when they saw what that fourth vow actually did, and the power it gave to these Jesuits, they wanted to take that power away. But there's a mistake there in infallibility. An author by the name of Cusack, and she was actually used to be a nun, and she's written a number of books on it. She says this about infallibility. Now, let me just repeat. When a pope speaks ex cathedra, I think I already said this, right? But he is speaking in his official capacity as pope. Supposedly, he is infallible. In other words, whatever he says is absolutely without mistake. And this is where they think that he's the vicar of Christ. The problem is that some popes have said that the Jesuit order was a good thing, and then popes after that have said that the Jesuit order wasn't a good thing. I'm being very, very basic in general. But she says this, that one infallible pope should have established the Jesuits, and that another should have denounced them as utterly unworthy to exist, and that a third should have reinstated them in all their ancient privileges. This is what happened through history. Is, shall we say, a political or a theological puzzle, which we are not able to solve. They all differed on the most important subject, and yet they all made ex cathedra declarations which flatly contradicted each other, but they were all right and all equally infallible. You see, there's a problem there. There's a paradox in the thinking. How can they be infallible and seemingly make a mistake? Now, the order is organized, and I'm just going to skim through this, but you have the Superior General. Now, the Superior General, who we saw was Arturo Sosa, he is the current Superior General. He has absolute and complete power to run the order in any way that he wants to. In regards to this fourth vow, Loyola himself strongly believed in obedience to the Pope. Now, this undoubtedly comes from the fact that he used to be a soldier. And so he believed in it. I believe in it very, very strongly, even against somebody's inhibitions to obey what the Pope might say that might, in their eyes, be bad. He believed that they should obey anyway. However, how does it really work out? Although the Superior General, as a Jesuit, has sworn obedience to the Pope, really that obedience is just a ruse. The Pope, that is, Pope Francis, you saw him, the man in the white. The Pope must ask the general, for the assistance of the Jesuits, to which the general decides as he pleases. In fact, there is a clause in the rules of the order which limits the power of the Pope. It says this, the power of the general shall be so unlimited that should he deem it necessary for the honor of God, he shall even be able to send back, or in other directions, those that have come directly from the popes. So, the point is this. Here you have an order within the Catholic Church that has essentially unlimited power. Unlimited power to finance, to be involved in politics, to establish their own things, and not even, there's no check and balance whatsoever. Even the Pope, that is, the Pope, okay, is unable, really, to stop the Superior General if he decides. So who's really the one deciding? And who's really the one organizing? Who's really the one driving things? Well, it's the Superior General. That's why sometimes he's known because he wears black. He's known as the Black Pope. Now, just a couple of things on Jesuit teachings. I will say this, that the way that a Jesuit is made is you mentioned, or you might remember that Arturo Sosa talked about the spiritual exercises of Loyola. You might remember that. Now, what that means is that they are very segregated. Essentially, before a Jesuit can take that fourth vow and take the vows, he goes through many, 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 many years of training. In fact, sometimes up to 30, 35 years. In those times, they take retreats. And in those retreats, they are sworn to silence. And what we're talking about is absolute and complete and total silence for like 4 days in a row. It makes them, it would put somebody, you can imagine, in an emotional state where really you can almost tell them anything. And they would talk about the torments of hell and all of these things while they're in that condition. Then telling them that if they were to go back on their vows, they'd be suffering those things. So here they have a person that they've put into a horrible emotional state and then uses them. And then after many, many years, after they've proven themselves, then they can take that fourth vow of a Jesuit and become a Jesuit. These are the spiritual exercises that the Superior General was talking about. Now, this idea of isolation and not having fellowship, they won't let them write to their parents, they won't let them write to their family, nothing at all. They completely isolate them. But that's not the biblical way, is it? The Bible talks about having fellowship. 1 John 1:3, that which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And so I have to finish. I will say this, the educational institutions, Jesuit institutions, you saw one in Buffalo, but the oldest one, actually founded in 1789, is Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Marquette University in Milwaukee is another one, Boston College, obviously in Boston, and then, of course, Loyola University here in Chicago. Those are Jesuit universities. They allow teaching, even a secular teaching, as long as it doesn't interfere or go against their own teaching. They do not allow anything, every single book that they study in those colleges come from a Jesuit angle. So let me just conclude with this, I have to finish. It has been said that the greatest trick of the devil is to convince the world that he doesn't exist. The Superior General said this in June 5th of 2017. We have formed symbolic figures such as the devil to express evil. He is suggesting that the devil is only a symbolic figure. Social conditioning can also represent this figure. Since there are people who act in an evil way because they are in an environment where it is difficult to act to the contrary. So what the Superior General of the Jesuits is suggesting is that the devil is nothing but a symbolic figure. They use the confessional very, very to their advantage. The confessional, I'll close with this because I did want to say this. The confessional in the Catholic Church, and I've confessed my sins in the confessional before. The belief is, and I was taught, and ever since the communion of the Eucharist, and ever since you take that, and you are confirmed, then you believe that unless you confess that sin to the priest, then you have no chance of being forgiven of that. So if you can imagine somebody, let's say we did that here at this church. Pastor Dammer would be the priest of the church. It's kind of funny, really, but let's say he was, and there was a confessional box. All of us would have to go to confession and confess everything that we've done to him, or else if we really believe, we would not be forgiven of those things. So then he would know all the deepest and darkest secrets of every single one of us. Would he be able to control us? He could, couldn't he? Knowledge is power. And that's the whole point of the confessional. And the Jesuits, their point on the confessional is to make the confessional easy for people. They give easy penance. They make it simple. Notice that the Superior General here is saying that the devil is just a symbolic figure. And so they make penance very simple, and they make it easy for people to do it so that it'll be easy to open up to these things, and then this is the way that they're able to control people. So hopefully you see that through this is the mindset of the Catholic Church. It's couched in that, and the teachings of Loyola are indelibly marked in that order. And it's a very, very powerful organization that has been used in the devil in time past, and those priests and those people that have gone through those spiritual exercises have no cloak for their sin, and they don't know the Lord, and they need to know the Lord. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your love for us.